WISR now presents It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey. Dave is off today, so we have a special guest host. It's Your Turn is Butler County's only live call-in talk show. You can join in the conversation by calling 724-283-2525. And now, let's join It's Your Turn and today's special guest host.
Welcome to the program. We've made it to a Friday. It's Your Turn on WISR 680 AM. I'm Tyler Friel, filling in for Dave Malarkey. Dave, still out sick today. We send him our best wishes. We also send our best wishes out to Scott Briggs, who anchored the morning news. He's also battling a bit of a cold, so hopefully I'm not next on the depth chart there to fall victim to the WISR bug, whatever may be floating around, but we'll at least make it through today, and we'll see what's in store for us tomorrow when we wake up. And when we wake up, it's just going to be downright cold. Tracy, of course, they're talking about just the bitter temperatures that we are facing, and it's just downright ridiculous out there. The sun has broken through at times, but still, it's freezing. Even the snow hat that I had on earlier today wasn't enough to keep me insulated. I could feel the coldness coming through. Maybe I should just invest in a better snow hat. But we'll talk about this weather with Scott Harbaugh. He is the morning meteorologist for WPXI, our news partners. We'll kind of get into a discussion about when this cold weather will get out of the area. Also, what's going on in the very East Coast, what they are calling a bomb cyclone. What does that mean? We'll dive into that. We'll also talk a little bit about the eerie snow. That's all coming up later on the program. Also coming up, we'll have our general manager at the Butler Radio Network, Vicki Hinterberger, join us. We are getting closer to our 12th annual wine festival. We've been doing this for a number of years at the Days Inn, a lot of fun. So we'll learn about what's all in store for the wine festival coming up in just a few weeks. We'll also talk New Year's resolutions in a number of different ways. We'll be joined by Colleen Heimowitz as well as Dr. Jennifer Etherlow when we are discussing a little bit about the Atkins diet, because we're talking about how to eat right, not less. So when people think that they have to go on a diet, they think, oh, I've just got to have this one little small vegetable for lunch and then a very small dinner. Not necessarily the case. If you eat right, then you have a chance to be healthier. So we'll talk with them. It's a New York Times bestselling author, Colleen Heimowitz, in their new book that is out right now that has just a litany of recipes in there. We'll have that conversation with them. And then we'll wrap up our program today talking with Sarah Alessio Shea. She's with the Pennsylvania Resources Council. We'll talk about how you can make New Year's resolutions to go green. We've been hearing people talking about going green. We've seen a lot of businesses, sports franchise, whatever they may be, they're going green. What does that mean? And if you wanted to get in on the fun, how exactly can you do that? And what are some good ways to get used to doing that? Well, we'll find about all of that coming up just about an hour or so from now. But we begin today's program, even though it's a jam-packed session of It's Your Turn, we begin with Open Talk. 724-283-2525 is the number. Again, 724-283-2525. If there's something on your mind that happened throughout the week that you'd like to talk about, something locally, something across the state, something at the national level, we'd love to have you chime in on our conversation. It's your time, Butler County's only live call and talk show. So if you would like to get something and join the conversation, we welcome you to do that at 724-283-2525. We'll start with some news that it has an effect locally, but came from the national level, and that is the Department of Justice's new decision to reverse policy across the country when we're talking about marijuana. And we see this locally because just a stone's throw away from where we are in our WISR next-tier studios, we have a new medicinal marijuana plant opening up, Crisco Yeltra. It's just outside of Kelly Automotive Park, the former Pullman Park. This from the AP, the Trump administration threw burgeoning movement to legalize marijuana into uncertainty Thursday as it lifted an Obama-era policy that kept federal authorities from cracking down on the pot trade in states where the drug is legal. Attorney General Jeff Sessions will now leave it up to the federal prosecutors to decide what to do when state rules collide with federal drug laws. So you've got a little bit of interesting decisions when we're talking state here now, because this, I believe, will be kicked back to the state. So how they regulate it, how they decide to move forward. We've seen a number of states go to legalizing marijuana for recreational use. We haven't gotten to that point yet in Pennsylvania. Medicinal marijuana is legal, but in terms of the recreational use of that drug, it is not. And the science is still, I would say, out on medicinal marijuana. There are a number of studies that show its benefits, especially when we're talking in terms of seizures. And so, at least from a spectator where I sit, it seems like the industry is turning to approve medicinal marijuana as a potential way to combat some illnesses and things of that nature. However, the recreational use is something that has been in limbo. I have said before, and I think I've said this on the show, I had always figured the legalization of marijuana will eventually go nationwide in 5 years. I don't know if this changes it. And that was pure speculation on my part. I'm not entirely certain the rules are going to be altered because of this particular policy shift from the Department of Justice. Now, no question, this will have an effect on the states that have legalized it. And so I think when you're looking to see how Pennsylvania moves forward, I think you'll have to keep an eye on a place like Colorado, California, Oregon, the places that have legalized it, what the ramifications are because of this ruling. But like I said, at a local level, we're going to see it in downtown Butler in terms of how the medicinal marijuana industry in Pennsylvania will be affected. Now, I have always said this, and I have a firm belief about this when it comes to alcohol in the state of Pennsylvania. Because the state is involved in the marijuana industry in other states, so Colorado, California, they can tax it, they can do a number of different things like that. I don't believe the state should be involved in this type of process. I don't think the state should have it both ways. And what I mean is this. I don't think the state should be able to tell us not to drink and drive at the same time selling wine and liquor. I always found it to be it's almost hypocritical. I completely agree. Drive responsibly. No one in this country would ever disagree with that. You need to drive responsibly. But I find it a little bizarre at the same time the state is the one that sells us our wine, sells us our liquor, and we have these archaic liquor and alcohol laws that when you go to other states just simply don't exist. I still remember the first time as a child I walked into a convenience store in West Virginia and saw beer on its shelf. I was just thrown for a loop. I'm like, what is this? This doesn't make absolutely any sense. My convenience stores, where I live, we just sell ho-hos and Twinkies and lottery tickets. I don't understand why they're able to sell liquor. Well, apparently, as I would later learn, this is normal. This is normal for a lot of different states. Pennsylvania, for some reason, hasn't made those strides. Now, we are starting to see it a little bit in this area. We've seen a few stores bring alcohol in. I believe the Get-Go on top of Route 8 has some alcohol that you can buy. I think the Sheets now on Route 8 also has that as well. But it's still a weird rule. Like, I think I went in there to get a six-pack, and I had to run one purchase of a six-pack under one card and then go get another six-pack and run it again as a separate purchase. They are so archaic in terms of its rules. But this is why the state should not be involved in liquor and wine and alcohol. I think it's just a double standard, and I don't think the state's finances should be hinging on the sale of alcohol and lottery tickets. And it is what it is. So now you throw marijuana into that loop, and I've always thought the states can see a potential chance to make revenue by taxing marijuana, by taxing alcohol, by taxing whatever, and they should not be involved in those particular industries. You wouldn't think, but they are. And so we'll continue to see how the new DOJ ruling shakes out. Again, we are in the open talk portion of It's Your Turn. 724-283-2525 is the number. If you would like to join in on our conversation or bring up a point of your own, please feel free to do so. School closures. I did have a question for some of our listeners because I'm 23. I have to think about it for a second. I'm younger, is what I'm saying. And so I think school policy has changed a little bit in terms of how they dictate closures. We'll continue on that topic for in just a minute. But first, let's go out to the phone lines. Hello, caller. Welcome to It's Your Turn. Go right ahead.
Yes. You know, the marijuana and federal government's against the marijuana, and the state wants them to stay out of the business. Well, illegal immigrants are things, and the state has these sanctuary cities, Philadelphia. The governor doesn't want to do anything about sanctuary city or the attorney general. And that's a federal law. You have to turn them over, and they ignore it. So how can they have it both ways?
There's a lot of nuance when it comes to government in terms of what they do and what they don't do. Sanctuary cities, to be honest, caller, I'm not read enough on that topic to speak to it. I just have always had a problem when it comes to the alcohol and drug versions of what the state does. So I know there's a major controversy surrounding that particular issue. I know it was a major part of the Senate race this particular past year. And it'll be something that I would like to research a little bit more.
What, the sanctuary cities or
yeah.
the marijuana?
Sanctuary cities, yeah.
Well, they one, I don't understand the sanctuary cities. It's against the law. They harbor illegal immigrants, and they are illegal. I don't mind them, but they keep on saying, we didn't have times. Well, Obama had 10 years. He had how many years to become a citizen? And they still choose not to become citizens. The one lady was caught with driving illegally for I don't know how many years, and no insurance, and had no license, but she was still driving. Who's paying for her insurance? Who pays for her health care?
No, those are all very legitimate questions to ask.
Yeah, but the state wants them to stay out. Then how can you make one rule? Hey, we're going to make marijuana and ignore you, and then here we got this law with the sanctuary cities where we're going to harbor illegal immigrants.
There's always miscommunication in government, especially when it comes to state and federal levels, and it's one of the more frustrating things being a part of this country.
Yeah.
All right. I appreciate – oh, go ahead. You got one more thought?
No, that's all right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Yeah, that's a topic I'm not entirely certain of. I've heard both sides of it, but I haven't researched it well enough. The one topic that I do feel certain on is that I just don't think they should be a part – of both sides of it. And there's a major difference between what the state does and what the federal government does, and that really gets to a philosophical question about what side do you fall on. You know, do you think the federal government should have more power, or do you think the state should have more power? And that's a philosophical argument that most people identify their political party because of that reason. But anyways, I did want to switch our conversation to school closures, because one of the jobs of a superintendent and even college president at times is to come up with when they decide to close school. So I wanted to ask the callers, did you have school closures at the rate that we see now? When you were growing up, I would probably say the transportation conditions weren't as pleasant as they are right now. And I know stories of my grandfather. He tells me he lived in the Meridian area growing up, and that he would have to walk, of course, a mile or two, cold, snowy weather, turn on the kettle whenever they got there, or fire up the kettle to heat the little schoolhouse that had about 8 grades packed in tight, and it never seemed like they canceled school. And so I was going to ask, was this the case when you were growing up, and how was it handled? How did they get in touch with you? What are the different ways back in the day that they handled school closures? Because for us, it was, you know, whether you heard it on the radio or heard it on the television or you got a call, and it seemed to happen more often than not. I mean, these are downright freezing temperatures, and I have no problem with the school closing today and schools closing all across Western PA. It's, you know, there are kids that walk to school. There are plenty of kids that walk to the high school, plenty of kids that walk to the intermediate, and now the middle school, I believe they call it, in downtown Butler. There's a number of different things that they have to consider. And so when it comes to school closures, I was just curious to see if there was any major differences when you were growing up. If you have any thoughts on that, or if you have any thoughts on just about anything, we're taking your calls. It's Open Talk on WISR 680 AM.
You're a dog owner, a dog parent. What does your dog mean to you? Company? Fun? Affection? Sure. But let's add comfort. Your dog offers a level of comfort at just the right time when you need some of that. Comfort. And that's what O'Shea offers at Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler. Comfort. So many people have told us that with O'Shea present at a funeral, she offers a level of comfort that's indescribable. Comfort for the family and comfort for everyone attending. So O'Shea is available for a funeral service, but only if requested by the family. O'Shea creates a feeling of calm, comfort. So come in and meet O'Shea and see why so many folks want her here at a funeral. And while you're here, ask about our unique services, our competitive costs, and our cremation program. Call us at 724-287-3706, 287-3706, or visit our website at www.thompson-miller.com. Thompson Miller Funeral Home, the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller, time-honored excellence.
Welcome back to the program. We are in the open talk portion of It's Your Turn. I'm Tyler Friel, filling in for Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525 is the phone number. Hello, caller. Welcome to It's Your Turn. Go right ahead.
Hi, Tyler. I was calling about the schools way back when. I graduated in the mid-60s, and I think it was communication that was the big issue, because we had to depend on WBUT, WISR, in order to find out whether or not there was a delay or closing. And once they established a delay, we left for school at the appropriate time. There was no way to tell us, oh no, there's no school. We've decided to cancel it. We were already off. We were already walking to school or walking to our bus or whatever. There were no cell phones. We depended on you.
And that's what I was... Go ahead.
That would be the reason why, that once they made a decision, they had to stick to it, because there was no way to let us know that, whoa, wait, the roads are worse than we thought, or it's colder than we thought. It was communication. Now it's just a text to the parents, and it's over. It's not that, it wasn't that way back then.
Were there as many closures as there are now?
Well, you know what? I think we idealize and we remember things differently than they really were. I seem to remember walking to school through snowdrifts that were much taller than me on the, you know, the sides of the road, getting to my bus stop. And I don't remember very many school closures. And also, back then, we weren't allowed to wear long pants. The girls had to wear skirts.
Oh. No matter what the conditions were.
No matter what. A lot of us would wear pants, snow pants or something, under our skirt and take them off when we got on the bus. But we were not allowed to wear pants. That was terrible.
That sounds awful.
Pretty bad, yeah. But I don't remember that many school closings. I think what we just went. The buses could get through. They might be late, and we might wait. But the buses could get through. There was school. Sometimes the bus didn't show up, and then we would all go home and find out that school was canceled.
And I've kind of figured that would be the line of thinking. It's so much easier to get in touch with parents and the people who need to know. And back then, like you said, there was the radio, and that was just about it.
Yeah, that was it. There was no way for mass communication. Sometimes on the TV, but mostly we depended on, at least in my neighborhood and my, you know, my area, we depended on WBUT or WISR, whoever we listened to find out.
Well, thank you for the call. Thank you for your insight. I do appreciate it.
Sure.
All right. Have a good day.
You too.
Bye. Yeah, I guess communication would have been different. And I do agree with her idea that we do seem to make things at least much bigger in our minds whenever we go back and think about what we did for school or what the conditions were like. And I'm sure my grandfather has, maybe elaborated on those stories more than they actually did happen. But nonetheless, it seems like that was the case. I just imagine it would be a little bit tougher back then in terms of communication to get that across. And like she said, when you had a decision, you had to stick to it. Unlike now, when they have to wait and try to wait until the final moment to decide, all right, should we do a 2-hour delay or should we actually go forward? and have some schools. So, yeah, I've always find that interesting. And like I said, we'll talk with Scott Harbaugh to get an idea of what's in store for us for the next 2-3 months of this winter that has been off to a rather harsh start. This, I think, is a little bit more of a worse winter than we've had for the past few years. It seems like we've had two relatively mild winters. I do remember, I guess it would have been 3 years ago, we had a big dumping of snow. I was up in Slippery Rock at that point, and we had a big dumping of snow, and that actually closed Slippery Rock for a day and I think forced a two-hour delay the next day. And I've always had a philosophy, if a college or university is closing because of the snow, then you know it was a bad snow or bad wind chill, whatever it may have been. And I think we've gotten away with relatively easy winters for the past 2 years, but these past 2 weeks surely have not felt like it. We are an open talk, 724-283-2525. I'm Tyler Friel, filling in for Dave Malarkey. And send our thoughts and wishes out to Dave. Hopefully he gets better. He's battling a bit of a bug. And I know there's a number of people doing the same. I know we've got people getting into the flu shot discussion as well. It's just a very downright freezing time. But we go back to the phone lines. Hello, caller. Welcome to It's Your Turn. Go right ahead.
Yeah, talking about the school closings.
Mm-hmm.
Same way. I went to school back in the 50s and early 60s. But I said, you know, we all had local schools. There's small neighborhood schools,
mm-hmm.
and they did not bus the people like they used to, which I think made a big difference.
And would they close more often because they didn't bus people, and, you know, even if the temperatures were cold, or would you have to go to school when it was chilly?
No, we walked to school in the freezing cold. Like the lady said before, I said, not allowed to wear pants. We had to wear dresses, but my mom would put long pants on under my dress, and I said, we walked regardless of how much snow.
Wow. So you rarely had closures or two-hour delays?
I don't think we ever had a two-hour delay.
Times have changed, no question about that.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with all the busing and then and not knowing what the roads are like, the kids standing out in that cold. It makes a difference to standing there waiting as opposed to walking.
I would agree with that as well. Well, thank you for the call.
Thanks.
I appreciate it.
Have a good day.
You too.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye. Open talk here on WISR. Tyler Friel in for Dave Malarkey. Back out to the phones. Hello, caller, and welcome to It's Your Turn.
Hi, Tyler.
Hello.
Happy snow day.
Happy snow day to you as well.
Well, I was just calling in. I'm a little bit older than the other two gals that called. And I lived in the West End and went to the Catholic school.
Okay.
And had to walk, you know, we walked to school, we come home for lunch, and we went back, and then we come home again. So four times a day you walked that. And if you didn't make it, if it was so bad, you just got marked on your report card that you were done. You know, you didn't make it that day. They didn't have, today we're not going to let them come because it's too cold. And I remember going into the school and putting my fingers on the wall of the, and my hands, you know, on the wall of the school, and they were frostbitten. I mean, you couldn't even feel anything. And then if you didn't have a full set of gloves, you put one hand in your pocket and the other one in your hand. Because we were poor, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But we had goulashes. We had to have goulashes because, you know, that was the style. and then later on, we would hide the goulashes so that we didn't want anybody to see we had them on. You know how that goes when you get older. Stylish. So, anyhow, those were fun times, I'll tell you what. And the only ones that got a bus were the kids that lived in the after they got their chores done, you know, like out of St. Wendland's and different places, up by St. Mary's and
mm-hmm.
all that. The only ones that got a bus were those kids. And we called the boys the farm boys because, you know, that's...
They were out in the country.
They had to do their chores before they came to school, and their boots were covered, you know, and everything, and they think, oh, my God, we'd look down at their boots, and we think, oh, my heavens, look at all that. But, you know, they're still shoveling, I think, kids, you know.
Absolutely.
So, anyhow, those are some fun times, and we never heard of a school closing or anything like that.
Now, where was the Catholic school on the West End?
No, I was down in the West End. I lived down there, but the Catholic school was up across from where it was the junior high at that time, but it isn't now.
Okay.
But the school was behind St. Peter's
okay.
Church, because there was a big school back there, 8 grades, and you, you know, would go there, and then, of course, they've torn it down since then,
mm-hmm.
so a lot of memories have gone. So, but those are some fun things, and I thought, you know, because I'm older than what the other two gals would be, and I thought, oh, my gosh, you know, they didn't know either, school days off.
Well,
you know?
I appreciate the call. Thank you for joining the conversation. Have a good weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right, bye. It's your turn, WISR, 680 AM. We are an open talk. Hello, caller. Welcome to the program. Go right ahead.
Thank you very much, Tyler. I just enjoying the school closing discussion because, like your grandfather, I think I'm probably older than he is.
He's 90 years old, so I'm not sure.
He's how old?
He's 90.
Oh, well, no, I'm in the ballpark. I'm 86.
Okay.
Yay! but no, I find it totally fascinating. I think about it all. I don't know how familiar you are with Lindora.
Yeah, okay,
but,
fairly familiar.
Okay, honey. I grew up living on Bessemer Avenue.
Okay.
And the school was clear up past Kohler Avenue.
Oh, that's, wow. You had to go up that
yeah,
whole
Lindora
hill.
Yeah, Lindora School was up there at the top of the hill. And we walked, and absolutely there were no school closings. But you have to remember, fashion did not dictate what we wore to school. Snow pants, and as the one lady said, galoshes over your shoes, your hat, your scarf, your mittens. And I don't remember ever having school canceled. And yes, he wasn't exaggerating. You walked through drifts up the hills through, and they didn't plow streets, honey. They used ashes for cars, and cars used chains to get up and down.
Yeah, Lindora so, still scares me whenever I have to drive through there in slick
so
conditions. Yes.
See, you're bringing back such wonderful memories. I'm laughing so hard, Tyler, because my parents were two different. I went to two different churches, my mom and dad. The Slovak Church, which was on the flat, and then a few doors over, the Byzantine Catholic Church, were the two. And
now,
you
would
never
that have,
missed church.
Would that have been
you
Saint,
walked.
Would that have been St. John's, the white church?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I think
yes.
my grandfather yes. went to that same one. That was the Slovak church?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Okay. Yeah, it was good. But I had to call you. I haven't lived in Butler now for over 60 years.
Oh, wow.
I've moved down to Natrona Heights. But nevertheless, growing up there, I think to myself, that's so funny listening to this conversation because, yeah, the one lady mentioned the only bus that came was for the children who did live in the outlying areas that were farm children. And they came in. That was the only bus. But school was never delayed or canceled. You just slogged your way up and back. And like the one lady said, we actually walked from their home for lunch back up again and back home again. I remember sliding down the hill on my book bag a couple of times. I know. You know, I thank you, honey, for taking us away from all the politics and things that sometimes kind of get you down a little bit with the way things work for either state or national. And so this is kind of reviving some very pleasant memories.
These are the conversations I would rather have. Thank you for your call.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you for bringing it up. Bye.
Bye. So there you go. A little bit of a different perspective than what the kids have today. And I had always assumed that was the case, just based off of what my grandfather had said. And he would have been in the Meridian area, closer to Renfrew than Meridian. And I believe the schoolhouse at that point would have been on like where Christ's and Ryber Road is. And so he had to walk the whole way to school. And obviously many of you have those same memories. And I think maybe the tides have turned just a little recently, as one of our callers had mentioned, due to communication, how communication had changed. And so they never apparently canceled school back in the day. Today, obviously not the case. canceling college classes sometimes, which was always one of my favorite parts of being a student. Whenever you would get that text or that call saying no more classes, I was always very excited about that. Same thing back in high school and grade school. There was nothing quite like a snow day. You go out, you break out the sled ride, or you break out the sled, you hit the hills with your buddies, most likely because you walked to the place wherever you were going to go sled riding at. And we always engaged in those types of activities. Last call for phone calls. We'll take a short break. We'll come back and finish up open talk if you'd have or would like to join the conversation. 724-283-2525 is the phone number. I am Tyler Friel filling in for Dave Malarkey. It's Your Turn continues on right after this.
For so many of us, a loving pet is, well, it's a member of the family, isn't it? If you're looking for a veterinarian you can trust when it comes time for a checkup or treatment for a pet that's ill, consider Suburban Animal Clinic and Dr. Dennis Damon, Route 8 south of Butler, 4 miles south of Butler, right at the intersection of Route 8 South and Thorncrest Drive. Dr. Damon treats small animals, dogs, cats, all small animals, and exotic pets, too. If you have a question about illness, symptoms, shots, a checkup, if you need to talk to someone about concerns with an aging pet or a pet near the end of life, you can trust Dr. Dennis Damon. He loves animals. He's a pet owner himself. Dr. Dennis Damon, veterinarian at Suburban Animal Clinic. Hours by appointment only, Monday through Saturday. Credit cards are accepted, and he makes house calls, too. Dr. Dennis Damon, Suburban Animal Clinic, Route 8, 4 miles south of Butler at the intersection of Route 8 and Thorncrest Drive. Phone 287-5289.
Welcome back to the program. Tyler Friel in for Dave Malarkey. It's Your Turn on WISR 680 AM. We have wrapped up our open talk portion of the program, and we are now going to shift our conversation to another favorite snow day activity, and that is indulging in a little bit of wine with dinner, whatever you may do. Our wine festival is coming up. Our wine festival, WISR's 12th annual wine festival. It is at the Days Inn and coming up at the end of the month. And with that, we bring in our general manager of the Butler Radio Network, Vicki Hinterberger. Vicki, real quick before we dive into this conversation, was school canceled back when you were growing up?
Yes, of course it was. Not as often as it has been in recent years, like when my kids were younger. But I remember there seemed to be a lot more snow because we could build igloos and do a lot more sled riding. But that could be just memory fading.
Well, that's what we've had conversation. We had some people saying school was never canceled. A lot of people who were in their, you know, 80s, whatever, said mm-hmm. we would go to school no matter what. And I was saying we had college canceled at times, which yes. seems to be quite rare.
Well, at Penn State, it didn't. There was snow there.
Well, there's nothing else to do in Penn State.
So you might as well
go to school. Yeah, exactly. Anyways, we'll shift our focus to the wine festival, 12th annual wine festival at the Days Inn. Let's hit the date right off the top of it.
Sure. Thank you, Tyler, for giving us some time to talk about this very fun Beat the Winter Blues event. It is scheduled for Saturday, January 27th, and it is at the Butler Days Inn, as you've indicated. And that's at 139 Pittsburgh Road, very easy to get to, and plenty of parking for those who are always concerned, because sometimes people will travel to go do what we're offering here locally, mm-hmm. and this is available, and you don't have to travel, you don't have to pay to park, and it's a great event locally.
So local wineries
yes,
as well.
Exactly. And we have some new wineries and some mead. You know what mead is? Have you tried mead yet?
Isn't it like almost like a cider?
It's like a cider. It's that's a good way of describing it. I have had it once, and I don't, you know, I'm not an expert on
it
yet.
Neither am I. Is it sweeter?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. The wineries we have are Allegheny Cellars Winery, Greenhouse Winery, Juniata Valley, Kingview Mead, Mazza Vineyards, Oak Spring Winery, Star Hill Vineyard and Winery, Webb Winery, Wilhelm Winery, Winery at Wilcox.
A lot of W's.
And Woody Lodge Winery.
Oh, even more.
Mm-hmm. And I got through those without stumbling.
That was very good. That's why you're look in charge out of the radio station.
Look out. There are two sessions, too, and that's to help get people moving so that enough people get to actually try the wines. We do one session from 2 to 5 so that if you have children, you can still get home in the evening and do an activity with them. And then there's a second session from 6 to 9 so that people who want to make an evening of it go to dinner and then join us for the evening session from 6 to 9.
And so people hear wine festivals and you should like wine if you're coming here, but there are a number of different things that you can do in case that isn't something that's in your wheelhouse.
Right, and it's also, how do I say this? The wine festival started as a way to educate people about wine, wine tasting, how you can taste the different flavors on your tongue, the different types of wine. Oftentimes people start out liking sweet wines, and then as their winery tastes mature, they become more cognizant of the different types of wine, to the drier wines, the Cab Savs, the Merlots, and that type of thing. So the wineries that we have coming bring a wide diversity of wines, but they understand most of the people coming are novices or new to the world of wine, and so they're prepared to take care of them.
And so you're talking, even if you're a novice wine drinker, or hey, I just like to have a glass of wine here and there, or if you're the expert, you know, the wine snob of the group, there's a little bit of something for everyone.
There is something for everyone, and they're prepared for that. And then they also have very unique wines. There's a winery, and I want to say it's Greenhouse Winery. They have one that has jalapeno.
Would not be my cup of tea.
Not for a drink.
No.
Maybe on pizza or a sub or nachos, but not necessarily in your wine. But it's very popular, and they actually sell out most of the time as well.
Wow.
So, like I said, there's some very diverse things, and usually have a special. Most of the wineries, when they come, have some kind of preconceived notion of what they want to help move at this event. And some of them, maybe half of them, have been here on a regular basis, so they kind of know what the Butler Market likes.
What does the Butler Market like? Do we know?
I don't. I'm too busy that day. I can't tell you what they do like. I cannot for the life of me tell you what they like. I know they like to enjoy wine.
Yes.
And that's why we're still holding it 12 years later. And just as I know that you're kind of still new with us, but the reason we did this when we started was WISR was turning 65. And we decided in the dead of winter, because it had been a yucky winter, we decided to just throw a party. And so we did it, and as the wine festival, wanted to help local businesses, because the local wineries were helping Pennsylvania businesses, and then the other booths and vendors that are there were helping them too, because as the radio, we try to help businesses succeed. And so this was just an avenue to showcase their wares and also have something to do, again, to beat the winter blues.
Now, this has been a pretty popular event.
Oh, it's very popular.
You talk about parking, and it gets utilized, and thanks to our friends at the Days Inn for helping us there. But even though there's a lot of people, there's still a lot of room to move.
There is. And that's one of the things. This year what we're doing is we're limiting it to 600 tickets per session. That may seem like a lot, but we have two full rooms. One of them is the gigantic crystal room, and that room will have maybe 30-some booths in it. And then the other room, which I can't think of the name of right now, that room will have some booths and some wineries as well. So between those two, I mean, they can seat 1,000 people in that room. So if we have 600 people split between the two rooms with some booths, there'll be plenty of room to move and get wine and meet up with friends and enjoy the evening. So, and I wanted to mention too, Tyler, that this event is kind of a regular for a lot of people. There are people that celebrate birthdays. They gather their friends and they say, hey, my birthday's this weekend. They plan for it. Then we also have had people that have regular weekend getaways. Like there's people that come from Ohio that they meet their relatives from other parts of the state, and they stay overnight and they make an evening of it building around our event. We have bachelorette parties. And then this last one I wanted to mention is a Thursday night wine club. And I just happened to hear them talking at one of these past festivals. And they mentioned to me that Thursday night they have events where they share different wines. And so they've made it part of their plans each year to come to our wine festival and try new wines to have at their regular meetings, their meetings, a wine club.
And so. I think one thing that we've seen really in the food and drink industry is people venturing out of their comfort zone. We've seen a bunch of craft breweries pop up. We've seen some different restaurants and different types of restaurants pop up, and now different wineries. So I think people are starting to move to the idea that, hey, there's things outside of just a normal Pinot and a normal Chardonnay, that there's actually a wide variety of different things that we can try. And that's what I like about the wine festival. There is a wide variety there.
That's the and each of these wineries may be Pennsylvania wineries, but they get their grapes from different parts of the country and mm-hmm. different areas, and they get different types of grapes from the Catawba to all the different types of grapes. So what may be Niagara at one booth may taste very different at another booth. They're similar, but they're not identical. So you do get some diversity when you're sampling.
No,
so.
I've found that too with wines where it's like, okay, this is I've had this before, and then you try a different brand and it almost doesn't even taste the same. There's a wide variety. There's a little right. bit of nuance when it comes to wine. And we are talking the wine festival, the 12th annual wine festival coming up at the end of January. What's the official Saturday on that date? January
27th.
January 27th.
Yeah,
okay.
You'll be there, don't you worry. That date will be firmly entrenched in your brain.
I just circled the last Saturday, and I know I'm going to be there. But we've got our whole crew will be there from WISR and the Butler Radio Network. And it's a full hands-on-deck day for us because it's a very popular event, and it's a fun time. And so we've talked about the wine, but there's also some food, and with what all comes within the premier ticket purchase?
The premier ticket is $20 pre-sale, and again, we're limiting it to 600, so I'm advising people to get them ahead of time because they will be $25 at the door as well. Mm. And they are selling well this year, and I think it's because of the weather, because people are already tired. And we got a couple weeks to go, and they're already tired of being stuck indoors. But anyway, with the premier ticket, it does entitle you to the official 6.5-ounce tasting glass, which is courtesy of our Deal Toyota partnership. They're collaborating with us and presenting the event, and the glass will have their logo on it. And then you also get a refreshment or snack voucher, which is good for the station's food station that we have at the wine festival. Those will all be given to you as you enter the wine festival. And those of you who attended know that it does seem that we get you going and you're in there quicker than you can imagine. We have it down pretty pat to get you in and get you rocking, because the line builds because people want to get there and get started. But then we move people through very quickly.
I remember the first time that I worked it and I saw this line moving, and I believe I was positioned in the wristband line. And if you've never been there before, the wristband line moves quicker than a Steelers game or any type of professional sporting event. You're just rolling through there, slapping stuff on and getting them through. So what we're also trying to convey here is, even though there's a lot of people, this thing moves well. You won't feel crowded. You can socialize. There's not like an overpowering music or anything like that. It's a good time to just spend with friends.
Truly. Thank you. That was a good way of describing it.
Yeah.
We have a variety of other booths that are there. We have everything under the sun, from a chiropractor. You can get a quick little massage, loosen up those bones from shoveling snow or scraping your car. We have jewelry booths. We have lifestyle booths and food. We have food. We have Miller's mustard with some pretzels. We have a lot of different things. We have wine slushes, which are very popular. Those are popular.
I've seen those around. I've never tried one yet.
Yes. They might be too sweet for you because you're so sweet already.
Aw, thank you.
But they're very good. So we have a lot of different type of vendors so that there's something that will appeal to everyone. We also have fundraising going on for the YMCA Strong Kids campaign.
Oh,
okay?
Yeah.
We have a basket auction that the YMCA Strong Kids will benefit from the funds from. Then there's everything in all those baskets. And one of the things I wanted to bring up that we are adding this year, there is a Finger Lakes getaway as one of the prizes.
Oh.
So it's an overnight stay at one of their hotels, and then some wine tasting in that arena as well. And it gives, I guess, everybody a chance to get out and enjoy wine.
I've heard the Finger Lakes are an absolutely beautiful location.
Regardless of what time of year, except when it's snowing. But that makes great ice wine.
There you go.
So it's all good. But that's something else we've added this year as an extra kind of benefit and attraction. It'll help raise some funds for the YMCA Strong Kids program as well. So we have a lot going on. There's something for everyone. We have all different kinds of activities that you can enjoy. There's a photo booth, and that also the proceeds from that will benefit the YMCA Strong Kids campaign as well. So if you have any interest in attending, which we hope you do, tickets are available right now. You can go online at WISR680.com or butlerradio.com, and you'll see the rotating banner. Or you can stop in here and see us. We're at 252 Pillow Street here in Butler. So
we're talking about the Wine Festival, the 12th Annual Wine Festival. If you're just joining us a little bit late, Tyler Friel in for Dave Malarkey. We're chatting with Vicki Hinterberger. She's the general manager at the Butler Radio Network. So the Wine Festival, again, January 27th. You mentioned tickets. You can do credit card online, right?
Yes.
Debit card, credit
mm-hmm.
card, whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. And we take checks down here?
Yes, checks, cash. Either one.
Whatever you want to do. We have an avenue for you to get these tickets. And you said, what, 12 wineries, just to recap? Or somewhere in the ballpark.
11.
At that point, it doesn't really matter. 10, 11, 12. You have a chance to try a little bit of everything. Do we have Butler County wineries here? Are these a lot of Erie-based ones, or are they just all across the state?
They're all across the state. The Greenhouse Winery is located out on, it's in Washington County. Oak Spring Winery is in Center County or Blair County, but they have an outlet here at Green Valley Nursery.
Okay.
And Mazza is a vineyard and winery in Erie, but they have a location here as well. So the rest of them, I think, are outside. Sorry, they're not Butler County wineries.
But I think that gives a chance for people to try, again, as we have mentioned, variety.
Right. And Star Hill Vineyard and Winery is in, I think they're up north by Du Bois, but they have an outlet here in town as well.
Okay. So there's a different...
There's connections. Right.
In terms of when people should get there, so let's say you're coming to one of the first sessions mm-hmm. or the second session and you're thinking, mm-hmm. well, I want to avoid the line, but I don't want to stay there the whole time. How do I negotiate?
Everybody's in within 15 minutes. So if you came at 2:15, 2:20, you'd be fine. Same with the second session. We have them in within 15 minutes. They're in them out.
And there's no price difference between either session, right?
Nope. It's the same price. It's just if you want a certain session that you know you can only get to one, just advise you to get your tickets early if you can. That way you get the time session that you need.
Now, what do you hear people say about the wine festival, like coming back to you? And, you know, what's users' reviews of the wine festival?
I think the most common thing you hear is that it's something fun to do, out of the ordinary, and it's nice to have it in a local venue that they don't have to travel to. It's almost like we're bringing the opportunity to them. I get a lot of positive, and I think the fact is that people like being out in winter and having something to do. I think that's the most common thread that I hear. And then people just love wine. I mean, it's a trend. And you have we have the microbreweries and craft breweries now. I think winery is one of those staples because you drink it with dinner, and it's not male, female, you know, it's both sexes enjoy it.
Covers everyone.
Exactly. And I think it transcends age, too. Because if you look at the attendance we have the people that just turned 21 and who are learning mm-hmm. about vineyards and wineries, and then we have the more mature individual or couples. We have retirees that come. I think there's a group that comes of, I want to say, retired teachers that attend, and they make it like an outing. So I think it's a reason to get together and see friends and have some fun.
Well, let's give a final recap of information. That way people, in case they're wondering, or if they have any questions, who should they call? What should they do?
Sure. The Butler County 12th Annual Wine Festival is Saturday, June 27th at the Butler Days Inn. We have two sessions, one from 2 to 5 or 6 to 9. You can pick which one you need to go to. And the tickets are only $20, and that entitles you to the official tasting glass and the refreshment voucher. Pre-sales $20. At the door, they're $25 if we have any left. Mm-hmm. And we do encourage people to make plans, get some friends, reunite with people that you, I promised New Year resolution, I need to get together. Follow through. Come see us. So.
That sounds like a good way to end our conversation. She's Vicki Hinterberger, General Manager, Butler Radio Network. It's our 12th Annual Wine Festival. Any parting shots?
Nope. Just if you want a ticket, we're open Monday through Friday from 9 to 5 or online at butlerradio.com, WISR680.com. Thank you very much.
Well, there you go. On the other side of the break, we will be talking with Scott Harbaugh. He is the meteorologist in the mornings for WPXI. When will this cold weather end? Will the weather be okay for the wine festival? What does the next 3 months entail? And what the heck is going on the East Coast with a bomb cyclone? We'll talk to him next. Tyler Friel in for Dave Malarkey. You're listening to It's Your Turn on WISR 680 AM.
Since 1938, Hunter Truck Sales has been a leader in the trucking industry. With 19 locations, we've grown to be the largest heavy truck dealership network in the Northeast. Proudly, Hunter has employed generations of families in the region and was recently honored to be named 2017 Family Business of the Year by the Pittsburgh Business Times. Check it out online at huntertrucksales.com for truck inventory, careers, and locations. Across our network, Hunter will provide solutions for all your trucking needs.
Well, we've been stuck in what appears, or at least has felt like almost a month. I think it's about 2 weeks where we've had just really cold weather. And with that, we reach out to our news partners at WPXI and bring in the morning meteorologist. He's the one that gets us set for our mornings. He's Scott Harbaugh. Scott, thanks for joining us. Happy New Year. When is this cold weather going to end?
Oh, very happy New Year to you. It's probably going to end Monday. We're going to get our first day above 32 degrees in a two-week stretch. Last time we were above 32 was Christmas Eve. Unfortunately, as we get warmer Monday, we're going to bring in a round of snow, and that snow is going to change to rain. But unfortunately, as cold as the ground is right now, that rain's probably going to cause some icing problems Monday afternoon and Monday evening.
And so with this warmer temperatures, is flooding going to be an issue in the area?
Yeah, I don't think widespread flooding. It takes a good, like, now that we have some ice on the rivers and the creeks and everything, it takes a good solid 5, 6, 7 days of temperatures in the 50s and 60s to really get widespread ice melt, to get ice jams going. I'm not saying there won't be any ice jams, especially in the northern part of the Allegheny River, but the fact that we're only going to be in the 30s and maybe near 40 degrees as opposed to, say, 50s and 60s, I'm not expecting widespread problems next week.
Are we going to see this type of weather for the next 2 months? Is this projected to be a cold winter or somewhat mild?
No, actually, we should end up winter total December, January, February, March. We'll probably end up just on the plus side of normal. The last 2 weeks has definitely been a bitter cold stretch. But once we get past this weekend, normal cold next week, high temperatures, low 30s, mid-30s, and then looking down the road, end of January into early February, I see a good stretch of temperatures, a good maybe 5 to 10 degrees above normal for several weeks.
Want to move to snow talk. Are we going to see any major snowstorms? Is there a projection for that?
Now, major snowstorms are hard to predict like months out in advance, but definitely in the next 7 days. I could see us getting a couple inches Monday before it changes over to rain, and maybe another system late next week that could give us a couple inches. But right now, looking at like the kind of storm they've had in New England, where some areas have picked up 12 to 18 inches of snow, nothing like that, at least in the foreseeable future.
And you talk about New England, and this is now my favorite weather term of 2018, at least the winter season, is a bomb cyclone. What the heck is that?
Yeah, your favorite weather term, my least favorite weather term. It's a nor'easter. It's always been called a nor'easter. It will always be a nor'easter. It's one of those storms that goes up the coast, and the winds along the coast come out of the northeast because of where the area of low pressure is, so hence the term nor'easter. A couple years ago, polar vortex, which is something that has been around for as long as I've been around, all of a sudden social media, polar vortex, it was the sexy term 3 years ago. Now someone coined bomb cyclone, and the only thing bomb cyclone is when a storm system does what's called bombing out, and that's when the storm develops so rapidly because of the combination of cold air over the continental U.S. and warmer waters over the Atlantic, we call it bombing out. The storm rapidly grows. Well, someone, in whatever infinite wisdom they had, started calling it a bomb cyclone, and it's been the number one question I've been asked for the last week.
Is there any other types of terms? You mentioned polar vortex or bomb cyclone. Is there any other types of vernacular out there for winter storms that exist that maybe we don't know about yet?
Yeah, there's one that I like. It's called a blue norther. We're not familiar with that here, but in on the Front Range of the Rockies from Nebraska through Oklahoma, Kansas, and Texas, they have this thing called a blue norther, and it's when cold air pours out of Canada straight down the east side of the Rocky Mountains, and temperatures can drop like 60 degrees in a day, and a storm system usually forms at the bottom of the blue norther and then brings blizzard conditions out to the Midwest and the Northern Plains. Not something that we get affected by here, but I always thought blue norther was kind of a cool term.
We're talking with Scott Harbaugh, WPXI meteorologist. Up in Erie, they saw a significant amount of snow. What exactly happened there to cause that?
Boy, that was perfect lake effect. What lake effect snow is when you get a fetch of warm water or cold air going over the warm water of Lake Erie. And we get these bands down here, like northern Butler County, Slippery Rock, can get 6-7 inches of snow with one of these bands, while downtown Butler barely gets a half inch, and Cranberry might get some flurries. Well, same thing along the Lake Erie shoreline, except the wind did not change direction much for about 55 hours. So over the course of 55 hours, the same areas kept getting snow and more snow and more snow, and I think the total was about 62.5 inches at Erie International Airport. But, you know, this is one of those systems where Erie International Airport got more than 5 feet of snow 10 miles inland, 10 miles from this. They got about 4.5 inches total.
We've seen some dramatic weather systems come through, whether it be the hurricanes down south or just even a small little snippet of the Lake Erie snowstorm. Has this been an outlier in terms of weird weather years, or is this something consistent that we just really don't think about all that often?
I think over the course of time, it's fairly consistent. You always, every single year, get a couple of strange things that just seem to be a little out of the ordinary. I think the problem is we have a lot of short-term or we have long-term memory issues. So things that happened like 4 or 5 years ago, I hardly ever hear about Snowmageddon in 2010 anymore when we got 21 inches of snow. But that was only 8 years ago. Matter of fact, 8 years ago on February 5th and 6th. So, you know, we live in an era now of instant gratification. So it's whatever is hot right now, whatever is on social right now, whatever people are talking about right now. And then the old timers like me who are approaching 50 years old, we remember the coldest winter of 76, 77. I remember the back-to-back 2-foot snowfalls of January 78. I mean, so those things have been happening for decades and decades, but we just tend to remember what's happened in the last couple of years.
Do we have an idea what it's going to look like for Steeler Sunday next weekend?
You know, I do think that we're going to get a storm system late next week, whether it's Friday or Saturday or Sunday. I can't quite piece together the timing yet because there's other things at play. But right now, it looks like temperatures would generally be probably in the 20s for kickoff, which would maybe serve better for us if we played Jacksonville. but, you know, even those games, I mean, the Miami Dolphins always joke, they don't mind heading to the north because they're the Miami Dolphins doesn't mean all 53 of their players are from Miami, which is a very good point.
We're talking with Scott Harbaugh, WPXI. Real quick, Scott, because I do think people are interested in how forecasts are made. What are things that you're looking at when you're developing a 7-day forecast?
Well, now we have everything that we used to print out on these large, what were called Diefax machines, giant maps, upper-level charts, low-level information is now all computerized. So what I do when I wake up in the morning, which is about 1:30 in the morning, is I start going over all my favorite pages on my bookmarks. I get forecast data from different sources, from the North American National Weather Service models, from the European models, the Canadian models, and I piece together the forecast. And I use a lot of continuity. Whatever Chief Meteorologist Stephen Cropper says the night before, I try not to go too far against that unless something has really changed or I really see something different. So a lot of it's computerized data that we can get basically any source. Matter of fact, the nice thing now is anybody can get this data. If you search National Weather Service forecast models, you can have access to almost everything we have access to. And I get a lot of people, a lot of high school students in particular, that want to be meteorologists when they get older, and they'll send me their own forecasts, things that they made based on the computer data they looked at. So that's the general crux of it. And then a lot of it is what you know about the area, especially when it comes to like lake effect. I was born here. I live in Butler County now. So I know when lake effect bands set up, they're very narrow. And as I said earlier, maybe Slippery Rock gets 6-7 inches out of a band where Butler gets an inch and Mars might only get a half inch.
Scott Harbaugh, WPXI meteorologist, thank you for your input. Keep up the good work and have a happy new year.
I appreciate you. Have a great start to 2018.
Thank you, Scott, and we'll be back right after this.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
Do you have an Amazon Echo, Tap, or Dot in your home? If you do, you can load the new Butler Radio News skill and get the latest local news, sports, and weather from Alexa anytime you want. The Butler Radio News skill is the area's only skill to offer local news, sports, and weather. To get the skill, open your Alexa app, search for Butler Radio News, and enable the skill. It's that simple. Alexa, what's in the news?
From the Butler Radio Network, here is the latest news.
The Butler Radio Network is proud to be a leader in providing up-to-date local content to you on the devices you use, on your radio, your computer or tablet, your smartphone, and now on your Amazon Alexa device.
Well, 2018 now around the corner. Actually, it's here, 2018. We are in it. We are living it, and that means New Year's resolution. I was actually at the gym yesterday, and there were many people trying to get back on the right track. And when we're talking about getting back on the right track, we're talking about eating healthier. And we're joined on the line by Colette Heimowitz and Chef Jennifer Etherlow. Colette, I want to start with you. When we're talking about getting ready and changing our diet for the new year, that doesn't necessarily mean eating less, right?
Right. And people usually associate eating less with eating healthier or losing weight, and that sets you up for failure because you're hungry all the time. The most important approach is, and to achieve your goals, is to have the right combination of carbohydrates, fats, and proteins. And when you do that and avoid sugar, you'll be able to have a sustainable way of living for the rest of your life and never be hungry. And that's the most important thing, is to stay satisfied and something that will sustain you.
And when people hear fats and carbohydrates, I think some people get a little worried, a little concerned. Are you saying these are things that actually aren't bad to have and incorporate into our diet?
When carbohydrates are low enough, you could enjoy fat. Fat is your friend on a lower carb, lower sugar lifestyle. But the quality and the quantity is really important. When you choose high fiber carbohydrates like vegetables, like berries, like nuts, and control portions of whole grains, you could enjoy fat and adequate protein. And that combination is what will give you the health benefits, will give you the variety, will give you consistent energy, and it will give you a way of life rather than a diet that you go on and off of, which is where everybody gets in trouble.
I want to switch over to Chef Jennifer Etherlow. What are some things that we could do, even when we're getting our own kitchen ready for the new year? You know, should we sort through different types of items, or when we make a mission to go to the grocery store, what should we have, you know, as some good marquee items to go get?
Well, you know, now there's a real trend for plant-based eating. So, there, you know, there's tons of vegetables in these recipes. So you can't go wrong with filling your shopping cart with vegetables. And in the book, we have a wonderful guide of which vegetables are best. But also, you know, it's about making simple, fast, home-cooked meals. We have delicious recipes. And since I'm talking to Pittsburgh and I'm a hometown girl, we have stuffed cabbage.
Ah, fantastic.
Stuffed cabbage is in this book. It had to go in there. And, you know, that's a healthy recipe. We've got the cabbage, very detoxifying, meat filling, which is delicious. And another recipe we have that we love is the Thai peanut Buddha bowl. And the Buddha bowl is very on trend right now. You may see it in social media. And it's a bowl that's full of vegetables, usually has avocado in it, some kind of protein. And we drizzle this with a delectable peanut sauce, which everybody craves, same sauce you get with peanut satay. So that's delicious. And, you know, the great thing to keep in mind is you don't have to give up the foods you love. It's just the way you prepare them. So we have all sorts of tips on how to do that. It's a little bit of planning ahead, but really easy. We have delicious desserts in this, too. We have a salted caramel cheesecake bite, which you don't even have to turn on the oven to enjoy. You just whip it up in your mixer and you freeze it. And it's a great thing to use when you're entertaining. And I tell you, I have a lot of people at my house on a regular basis being a chef. So this is a quick, healthy, low-carb dessert that I can whip up in minutes.
And we're getting ready for, I hope you're a Steelers fan, Jennifer, because we're getting ready for Steelers Sunday.
I am.
We're getting ready for
hot wings from the book. We've got six Parmesan meatballs I'm taking over to my friends. I'm ready to go.
That's what I'm looking for. So there, we can eat and snack healthy right during the game.
Absolutely. And, we blend in vegetables with all those proteins to make it balanced. So the key is really balance, but also eating the things you love.
And if you could, again, just give us the name of your book and where people can purchase it.
Atkins Eat Right, Not Less, Low Sugar and Low Carb Lifestyle, and it can be found on Atkins.com.
Colette Heimowitz, Chef Jennifer Etherlow, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tyler.
All right, have a good day.
You take care.
Tyler Friel filling in for Dave Malarkey. We'll be back right after this.
It seems that almost every day there's news of a breakthrough in healthcare. New medicines and procedures, imaging that opens a new window into the human body. At Butler Health System, interventional radiologist Dr. Thomas Franco understands that even with these breakthroughs, no technology can replace the human side of care.
Every image tells us a story, but there's a bigger picture, and we never lose sight of that. Healthcare is more than practicing medicine. It's about taking the time to understand where every patient is coming from.
For cardiac electrophysiologist Dr. David Schwartzman, that understanding is ultimately the key to better outcomes.
Technology isn't enough. Skill isn't enough. We have all of that. It's about improving the quality of the lives we touch every day.
At Butler, we know what it takes to provide the very best of care. But more importantly, we know why we have to. Caring hands, remarkable minds. That's Butler Health System.
Welcome back, listeners. Tyler Friel in for Dave Malarkey. Thank you for joining us on this Friday edition of It's Your Turn. We have been talking New Year's resolutions all week long. And when you think New Year's resolutions, you think health. You think diet. I got to work out. I've got to eat better. Well, what about changing the way that you throw out the garbage, recycle? You have a chance to do another initiative when it comes to simple things like that. And with that, we bring in the Environmental Education Coordinator with the Pennsylvania Resources Council. She's Sarah Alyssa Shea. Sarah, thank you for joining us. Happy New Year.
Well, Happy New Year to you. Thanks for having me on.
So we're going to be talking new green resolutions for 2018. And I want to ask, and when we talk about the environment, I always ask our guest, why should people go green?
Well, there could be a number of different reasons, but I think, it really breaks down to, every person has an impact on the environment. I think sometimes it's like, only one person, really, what can I do? But really, the impact of making changes, even, as one person, not only can you impact those around you, but you do have a greater impact on the environment, all of the different things that you do, just throughout your day and what you thought of and what you choose. Just knowing that being one person, you can still do a lot for the environment, and it's important. It's where we live, and it's where our children live, and we want to keep, it a good place to be.
What does the Pennsylvania Resources Council do in regards to the environment?
So our main focus is resource conservation and waste reduction. So we have a lot of programs that focus on that. It includes everything from collection events, or what we call hard-to-recycle items like TVs and electronics. We do collection events for household chemicals, products we don't want to end up in a regular landfill. We also have a Zero Waste Pennsylvania program where we work with large-scale events and businesses to really try and reduce the amount of waste that they're generating and kind of look at what are they generating and see is there ways we can kind of reduce what they're generating in the first place. Maybe they can switch to reusables or compostables or things of that nature. But we also see things like a film festival that we hold, which we'll be holding this March, to try and just educate the general public on these are some things that other people around the United States are doing, and kind of try to motivate people to do some stuff on their own through those film fest. And other things we do include education. We're in schools. We do adult education workshops on things like, backyard composting and rain barrels. So it runs the gamut of different things that we do, but it's really all under that big umbrella of, trying to reduce our waste, trying to preserve our natural resources here in the state of Pennsylvania.
Well, let's piggyback off of one of the things you said about, learning, trying to get the word out, teaching people about what preserving the environment means for Pennsylvania. But we have been sent a list of 5 tips for the new year, so things that we can do to go green for 2018. And one of those is to learn more about the environment. What can people do, and what are some ways that folks can learn about the environment?
Well, one of the ways, and we are, you know, one of the, you know, nonprofits in the region that hold workshops and education programming for youth and adults. And so if there's something I think that, you know, maybe you've been interested in or wanted to kind of start to do but weren't really sure how to go about it, one of those things is backyard composting. So, you know, for some people it might be as simple as, you know, not putting your food waste especially in your trash. So instead of, you know, you eat that banana, you have that banana peel. Instead of throwing that in that trash, it's just going to sit in the landfill forever. Why not compost it in your backyard, allow it to break down, and add it to your soil, and that way it provides some benefit and it's not just taking up space in a landfill somewhere. Well, that might seem complicated to some people, but it's really not. And so the idea would be, hey, you know, if you come take a workshop with us, learn just the basics and ins and outs of how to compost, and receive a bin, so you're kind of ready to go, and you leave that workshop ready to try something new. So that could be one thing, but I think it would be, you know, find where your interests lie. What, you know, are you interested in getting a rain barrel for your house? Are you interested in backyard composting? Do you want to make green products? And kind of find maybe where your interest and your focus lies and search out some educational opportunities around that. I think, you know, what's nice about the workshop is that instead of you having to do the online research and try to find the best bin and try to find how to do stuff, that's where you come to the workshop. You get all of that in like an hour and a half and you can leave ready to go.
What barriers or what pushback do you hear from people who don't recycle or really don't have a cognizant awareness of the environment?
I think some people, you know, just maybe don't see what the benefit is. They just, you know, think, you know, I don't want to take the extra time to sort my stuff, or, oh, I don't think they recycle it anyways, or just some, like, misconceptions I think people have about it. I think sometimes it goes back to that, you know, I'm just one person, how do I as one person make an impact? I mean, but if you just think of waste and how much, you know, waste the average person generates a day, you know, 4 pounds a day, and you're throwing all of that away for your life, I mean, that adds up. And so, you know, recycling, I think, is one of the easiest, simple ways that most of us can make an impact. You know, just look and see, what does your municipality recycle? How do you have to put it out? You know, most municipalities, they're going to come right to your curb to pick it up, and all you have to do is look and see what you need to sort out. And usually, it's single stream, which means almost everything goes in one bin. So you're not even sorting your paper from your plastic, from your glass. You put most of it all in one bin and set that out. So I think, you know, we've tried to make it as simple and convenient as possible for residents. But really, it's just, you know, take that one extra step, look and see what you need to recycle, and, you know, just take that extra second to put it in the recycling bin over the trash bin, and over the long haul, you're going to make, you know, a big impact. But I think, you know, as an adult, can make an impact on those in your household. You know, if you have young kids, they see you recycling, they realize that there's a value and an importance to doing that, and, you know, they'll carry that with them as well.
One of the things, I think a few weeks ago, maybe even a month or two ago, I was talking with someone about similar topics, and one thing that he said was that when people recycle, it actually has an economic impact on where they live. Would you agree with that assessment?
Definitely. I mean, you think of, you know, many different ways it has an economic value. So, you know, recycling, landfilling a material, you're just going straight, you've created a product, you spend a lot of time and energy on that product, and all that product's going to do is then go to the place and go sit in a hole in the ground. But if you take a product that, you know, it's plastic, it's been, or it's a metal that's been mined, you're going to take that, you're going to recycle that, you're going to turn that into a new product. That product then isn't just going to go sit in a landfill. It's going to go to a recycling center that has employees there that are going to, you know, sort that product out into a specific commodity. From there, it's going to go to a place that's going to turn that, you know, metal can back into a new metal can, and that has employees, and, you know, that's benefiting, you know, the neighborhood and area around it. And even, you know, looking at, or other municipalities, a lot of times, you know, it just costs money to put stuff in a landfill. But there are some recyclables that have some, you know, benefit to recycling them and monetary benefit. And so it makes even more financial sense in some cases to recycle a material because it's less of a cost, to the municipality and to the area to dispose of versus just, taking it and hauling it and letting it sit in a landfill.
We're talking with Sarah Alessio Shea. She's with the Pennsylvania Resources Council. We're talking tips for 2018 to help you go green. So number one, we talked about was learn more about the environment. Number two, and you're going to have to help me out with this one, was avoid toxins in your home. Now, how is that going to help the environment?
Oh, so many different ways. We have a program at Pennsylvania Resources Council that's not only in school education, but also adult education. And it's around, some of the weeds. Kind of daily products that we use that are contain ingredients that are not necessarily healthy for the environment or for ourselves. And we just are trying to educate the public on, okay, here are some alternatives that you can use that have a lesser impact on human health as well as the health of the environment. And one simple thing that I go back to and usually bring up in these workshops is the microbeads that used to be and maybe still are in some cases, mostly they've been banned, in like face washes. So what they were tiny pieces of plastic that were used to kind of exfoliate the skin. And so, we talk a lot about when we use products in our home, whether they're like personal care products or cleaning products, where do they usually end up when we're done? And a lot of it is we dump them down a drain, we wash them down our sink, we wash them down our shower. And so all those products that we're using in our home have a good connection to the greater environment. All those little plastic microbeads that are used to wash your face, they're going down the drain into our water supply, and then what's the greater impact for that? So it's just trying to get people to think a little bit more on a broader scale that some of the products that they use, it's not just contained in their homes, has a larger, footprint in, their community, their greater environment. And then just simple switches. So, instead of using maybe a cleaning product that has a lot of synthetic fragrances, chemicals used to clean, going back to basics and using things like baking soda and vinegar, things that are truly less expensive, clean just as well, and are healthier and safer for air quality, water quality, for your home and for your family. So that's kind of where we're kind of shooting for in that program. And there's a lot of great resources out there for people. The workshop is, once again, just a way to kind of make it simple for people if they want to make that change. Instead of doing the research on their own, come to the workshop. We give you a nice overview. You leave with a kind of a green cleaning starter kit. So that way you can test out some recipes, try them, see if you find something maybe out of those that you want to use, and then start using that from now on.
Well, since we're about halfway through the interview, could you give me some information about these workshops, where people could go, and how they can get more information?
Yeah, definitely. The best way is to go to our website. It's www.prc.org. On there we have a calendar that lists all the dates for our upcoming workshops, as well as if you search by topic. So if you search by rain barrel, if you search by composting, you can go to that page and see where our workshops are held. We have a pretty extensive list starting in the spring. We usually start, I want to say, March. And go through all the way, to the summer and then through the fall, January. Given a couple months. So definitely head to the website. If they don't have internet access or prefer, they can always just call our office. It's 412-488-7490 and just direct to, some of our folks in our office, and we'd be happy to let them know when, where the workshops are.
All right, let's pick up on the tips again. This is another one that I'm interested in, becoming a savvy consumer. How can I, as a consumer, keep in mind what I need to do for the environment while I'm purchasing products for whatever it may be?
I think it's trying to, look at when you go to buy something, is this something, that I absolutely need? Is this something, is the packaging recyclable? Also looking, is this something, and, it ties into one of our other points, that maybe I can find secondhand, too. There's a lot of resources out there for ways to, whether it's, the Goodwills and the Salvation Armies or the online Craigslist and, other opportunities where people are reselling stuff. And so just thinking of, if this is something I can get secondhand that works just as well, how many resources am I saving then by going out and buying something that's, totally brand new product? So I think that's something to think about. I mean, that also can take some money as well. I think once you kind of start getting in that mindset, that kind of just slowly folds over. You know, once you start thinking about that for one product, that starts to be maybe become your go-to first way to look at things before you go get something brand new.
We're talking with Sarah Alyssa O'Shea. She's with the Pennsylvania Resources Council. Environmental Educational Coordinator is her title, and we are talking the top five tips to become green in 2018. Number four that I have, make reuse a household word. What can reusing do for the home?
Oh, I mean, so much. You're not generating, kind of going back to the point I was saying in the last, you're not generating new stuff constantly, and that usually leads to, you know, that's more resources being used, that's more waste being generated. So if you can find stuff that you can reuse, that you can share, I mean, one of the things I see is, you know, folks that have young children and how quickly, you know, your young children go through clothes and even toys and things like that, and how I've seen, you know, people just pass things down and even things like that so that, oh, you know, my child grew out of this, so I'm going to pass this to my friend. And people have been doing that for, you know, ever and ever. But that's just a way of, you know, sharing materials that you have, things like tool shares and, you know, things where we're not necessarily needing to get our own thing, a brand new thing. You know, how can we reuse things or share items to just lessen our impact on the environment and lessen the amount of waste that we're generating. You look online and go to a Goodwill, or there's just so much material out there that's in good condition, that's gently used, that can have a second life, that it makes so much more sense to do that versus having it sit in the landfill and really not serving any purpose whatsoever. So, doing reuse in your daily life, whether it's you kind of passing stuff on or purchasing gently used items. We do an event usually once and now twice a year called Reuse Earth. We'll be holding ours on Earth Day. What we do at this event, the whole goal is to promote reuse, but there's a number of really amazing reuse-focused nonprofits in our region who their missions revolve around either reselling or sharing gently used items with people in need. So we partner with a number of different nonprofits that are reuse-focused. We hold a one-day collection event for people to come and bring their items that they don't need anymore, and then these nonprofits could then use them and use them for their mission. So it could be medical supplies through working with a Global Link, or it could be furniture through a nonprofit called Off the Floor. The range of nonprofits there, you know, is wide-ranging, and the material they take is wide-ranging. But it's really a way for people, you know, don't put that stuff out at the curb. There are people that can use it and can need it. And so, you know, and these nonprofits take things all year round. All these stuff is trying to make it convenient for people as a one stop. You come, you know, everybody's there. But we also hope to use it as an educational tool. So, you know, maybe just to make people think twice before just setting that stuff out at their curb for their trash. You know, look at that item. What are you getting rid of? Is it something that maybe somebody else can use? And are you willing to take maybe that extra little bit of time to find a good outlet for that item versus just putting it out for trash?
And how do we make that, and this could be a broader question, how do we make that normal in houses? Because when I was growing up, just using recycling as an instance, my parents recycled, so I recycled. How do we make reusing, recycling more normal in households?
It can probably go both ways. I mean, one thing, too, that we can always do is increase our education for kids. I think a lot of times if parents are necessarily not kind of along that path and that mindset, if we can kind of connect to the children in the household and bring that information home, whether it's from school or from a summer camp, a lot of times they have a bigger impact than we give them credit for. And so I think, you know, that can be part of it. But I think it's just, you know, trying as each individual to kind of, you know, share your mindset. And I think it's easy once sometimes you see somebody else do something and you realize, oh, well, yeah, that makes total sense. Why aren't I doing that? And so it's just kind of showing by example, and hopefully, you know, that can kind of spread throughout, you know, on your street and your community and so on and so forth. I mean, for the longest time, something as simple as getting plastic straws in cups at restaurants, you know, I really for the longest time never thought twice about it. Just, you know, it always came. And then the more, you know, with being around other people who, you know, thought about it and said, well, why am I generating this wasted straw that I'm not going to use? It's a piece of plastic that we don't need. And they just started to ask when we would sit down, oh, we'd like, you know, waters, but no straws, please. And just something as simple as that and how quickly that rubbed off on me, so then now I do it. So even just thinking in those kind of ideas of, you know, if I bring my to-go container, my reusable to-go container to the restaurant instead of using a plastic, you know, to-go container. If somebody else sees me do that, maybe they'll be like, oh, you know what, next time I come, I can do that as well. And so hopefully that could be a way to kind of try to get it a little more. I think the more people see it out in the public, the more then they're likely to start kind of bringing that, incorporating that into their home life.
That's a perfect segue into the final tip the PRC gives us is share with your friends, sharing environmental stories, different things like that. What can you speak to on that?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, just saying, you know, if you went to a collection event and had a great experience, you know, let other folks know that. Like, hey, this is an opportunity. You can do this. This is a great way to help the environment. Volunteering is an excellent way, whether it's with PRC or one of the, you know, many different environmental organizations in, you know, the Pittsburgh, greater Pittsburgh, Allegheny County plus region. You know, that's a great way because I think then, you know, if you take a couple hours, volunteers are so important to environmental nonprofit organizations. Speaking for PRC, there are so many programs that we could not hold without volunteers. And I think, you know, going to an event as a volunteer and getting just an idea of, you know, different environmental issues that you might be helping on, then taking that, you know, experience, that firsthand experience back into your home, to your friends, can really make, you know, an impact, not only on your friends, but also by volunteering and helping out that nonprofit. Because, once again, you know, volunteers are so essential to a lot of these organizations like ourselves that, you know, it's just a really great way to get firsthand experience and I think be willing to share that experience to friends and family.
We're talking with Sarah Alyssa O'Shea. She's with the Pennsylvania Resources Council. If you could, again, one more time, give information about these workshops, where people can learn more information about that, what's the website, phone number, different things like that.
Yeah, definitely. I would always say, you know, checking on our website is a great option. It's just www.prc.org. We have a calendar of events that's up where you can look for our workshops there. You can search for specific topics, so if there's something, you know, you'd like to specifically learn about, whether it's taking a workshop, whether it's maybe going to one of our collection events, you have an item. And in our organization as well, you can always call us as, I have this item, I don't know what to do with it, kind of a thing. We are a clearinghouse for these kinds of questions. And so, you know, call us and say, I have, you know, this item that's no longer working, where can I recycle it? Or I have such and such, and it's still good, I don't need it anymore, where can I, you know, go with that? So people can call us. Our number is 412-488-7490. That's 412-488-7490. And just call us even with those questions and say, hey, you know, I live here, I have this, I want to get rid of it responsibly, how do I do that? And we're happy to help in that case.
If you had about 1 minute to give an elevator pitch to listeners for why they should recycle, what would it be?
Oh, I just think it's one of the simplest, easiest ways that you can make an impact on the environment. You know, it's all contained in your home. It's, you know, it's just a basic, easy way, I think, to make an impact. And, you know, we can all do really simple things that can make larger impacts, I think, and recycling is really one of those things.
She's Sarah Alyssa O'Shea, Pennsylvania Resources Council's Environmental Education Coordinator. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
I'm Tyler Friel, in for Dave Malarkey. The It's Your Turn program continues on right after this.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick two is 770. Pick 3 is 089089. The pick 4, 5650. Pick 5, 51658. The wild ball for each of those is 5. Treasure Hunt, 3, 4, 14, 19, and 27. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's Treasure Hunt is $30,000. By the way, the Mega Millions jackpot tonight, $450 million. The Powerball tomorrow night, $570 million.
Thank you.
Boy, that Powerball number and the Mega Millions number continue to go off. That would be a nice little chunk of change if you could win that. And you know what you should do with your winnings? If you were to, let's say, hit $450 million, or maybe you don't hit it. You know where you should go? Miller's Shoes. It's that time of year. At Miller's Shoes right now, how about this? Hundreds of pairs of shoes, boots, and slippers are 20% off, and that is just in time for the cold weather. And we're talking all your favorite brands. American-made SAS, New Balance shoes, Timberland hiking boots, many more. And also, they've got women's fur-lined boots. And in fact, our colleague, our own Shailen Kirchy Lang, is sporting a new pair of comfortable and stylish white mountain boots from Miller's. So they've got a full selection for you there. They are in downtown Butler. You should probably know where they're at because they've been there for 125 years. You walk in, Jimmy Chipperian greets you with a smile, will take care of you and get that right pair of shoes for you, and that's all at Miller's Shoes. Big thank you to Vicki Henneberger for joining us as we talked about the wine festival. Scott Harbaugh of WPXI, Colette Heimowitz, along with Dr. Jennifer Etherlow, and then Sarah Alyssa O'Shea, who just joined us from the Pennsylvania Resources Council. On Monday's edition of It's Your Turn, we will be taking a look at Ask the Governor. We'll join our friends from Radio PA as they sit down with former Governor Tom Corbett. Going to be a really interesting conversation there. And we'll have an open talk portion.